This week's episode of Game Dev Unchained is sponsored by us. That's right. This one is for all the students and new hires in the game development industry. We've compiled all of our career tips and secrets into a must-have guide called Game Dev Unchained Game Industry Survival Guide. This 10-chapter book breaks down the most important steps that you need to really get your career going. So if you love our podcast, you definitely want to check out our book. It's available today on Amazon. All right. Thanks, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the number one podcast on game development and the lifestyle. I'm Larry Charles, one half of the Game Dev Unchained podcast team, and I brought back with me the very first kid-tested, mother-approved model, Mr. Brandon Pham.
Yes, what's up, everybody? Mothers do love me. This is Brandon Pham, and please welcome our special guest this week, Jeff Spoonhauer.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back again.
Hey, Jeff. How you been?
Yeah, doing well. Doing well, keeping busy.
So Jeff is one of our earlier guests. He helped supported us, and we supported him in some capacity when we had five people listening. But this is a year later episode. If you remember, Jeff talked to us when he was beginning his indie project anew. Distant Light, and now he's in the process of getting his stuff kickstarted. So we're gonna revisit and project while you know what's happening during that time.
Soothsayer.
Yes, but for the first timers, can you just quickly go through your resume? Yeah. Don't have to go in depth, but just a little background.
Absolutely. Yep. So let's see here. Went to grad school at Rochester Institute of Technology, finished up in 2002 with an MFA in computer animation. Went straight into the industry as an animator at EA, actually at EA Tiburon in Orlando, and worked on the NFL Street games. Went to a variety of studios. I was one of those guys that flipped around every 2 to 3 years, worked at Volition on the Saints Row games. Did a lot of full-time freelance work for Sony as a cinematic director, animator. And then my last studio gig was at 2K for almost 6 years as a senior video editor, animator, did a lot of cinematic stuff on projects with 2K. And then in 2012, I started teaching at the University of Notre Dame. So I'm an assistant professor here teaching Maya classes, 3D, digital production stuff, sound design, pre-viz, post-production type stuff. And started working on my indie game, Anew the Distant Light, about 2.5 years ago, I think. You sort of start to lose, you go into that long, dark tunnel of indie game development. But yeah, about 2.5 years. Yep, been working on the project. Here we are. How was that? Was that quick enough?
That was great.
All right, cool.
So yeah, the last time we heard from you, you were in year production. You were starting to go to show it off, right? Mm-hmm. At these places. Like, what was your first place that you publicly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our first venue for showing off the game live was at Comic-Con in Phoenix Comic-Con in Arizona, which was interestingly scheduled in June. So it was 115 degrees that weekend in Phoenix. So it was pretty brutal, but the show was awesome. And that was it was really validating because we finally got to put it out in front of people and let them come up and play it. And people really liked it a lot. We got a lot of really good feedback. And I mean, the game's come a long way since showing it off, but we did get a really good reception at Comic-Con. We won an audience. We won the Audience Choice Award, which was really exciting.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. We have this really cool gold plated Xbox One controller award, which is kind of it's the only award that we have right now. So it's like, you know, pretty first, special. First and only. and then after that, it was sort of interesting. The head of PR at Unity basically made with the Made with Unity group. It's a separate group that highlights developers using the Unity engine to build games. Mm-hmm. He saw a tweet of ours, just the timing of it just worked out perfectly, you know, where he saw a tweet of our trailer and he thought it looked awesome. And he ended up inviting us out to the Made with Unity showcase in LA. Mm-hmm. And that was last fall. So that was awesome because they sort of picked, I think, like 35 or 40 games across the world of that are being made in Unity that they're excited about. And they picked ours and brought us out. And we got to, again, demo it live for people. And it was just such a great trip. We met so many industry people, internal people at Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, Facebook, all these great people were there playing the game. And so that was a really great opportunity for us to just sort of expand our network. And again, just get feedback on the game. For now, that's it. We're just like, we're really trying to focus on development. And then because these shows just take so much energy and so much time to prepare for, we were just trying to focus on development. And then of course the Kickstarter that started yesterday, mm-hmm. that's been my full-time job for about 2.5 months, just mm-hmm. getting ready for that. So it's just the two of us making the game.
It's still the two of you guys just mainly making the game right
yep.
now.
Okay. Yep. Steve Copeland is doing all the programming. I'm doing all the art, mm-hmm. animation, sound. And then we have our, I say two full-time, but we do have our great, amazing composer, Wilbert Roget II.
All right.
Scoring it. Yeah. He's just fantastic. So
yeah. His name sounds fantastic.
Very proper. Yes. We call him Will.
Sorry. Your Kickstarter's up for one day. How's it doing?
It's doing well, man. Steve and I slept so badly the night before the Kickstarter launched. We messaged each other in the morning. I'm like, I was waking up every hour looking at the clock. It was horrible. And he was like, oh man, I did the same. It was terrible. But then it ended up being good. We've been live for about a little over a day, and we've already hit 30% of our goal, of our $30,000 funding goal.
Nice.
Yeah. In the first, there's sort of like this statistic with Kickstarter where if you can get sort of like the general thinking is if you can get 20% funded in the first 48 hours, your chances of success in the end are, I think, like 90% or something. So we're obviously hoping that
so hoping true. Statistics are yeah. helping you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in this episode, yeah, I mean, what I really am interested is in the process of, you know, you guys were probably showing and eventually got picked up to do Made with Unity, talk to these execs. You know, I'm very interested in the process of how to, prepare for the first show, right? You guys went over to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, was the submission was pretty straightforward? You guys just gave them a site link. They checked it out. They liked it. They invited you. The trip, I mean, how much do they cover? Yes. Do they cover it at all? They just told you to show up. Here's your booth. You know, what was that mm-hmm. like?
So the Comic-Con process was a little unusual because their presence at Comic-Con. Let me step back a second. This is like the Arizona Video Game Developer Showcase. So it's sort of started small and has been growing year over year. And their little corner of Comic-Con has become more and more popular.
I see.
Over the past couple of years, and they keep growing and doubling in size and adding more developers. So through a few sort of personal contacts, we were put in touch with these people that organized the event. And they just kind of took a look at our trailer and they just said, this looks awesome. You guys want to come out and show the game? That's really unusual. And we were very lucky to get in sort of the back door that way. Mm-hmm. So we were really grateful on that front. But yeah, like they were super easy to work with. It was really inexpensive to go to that show. These shows can get really crazy as far as costs go. Like when you go to big shows like PAX and E3 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the costs were very reasonable. We got to interface with, like, you know, there are over 100,000 people at Comic-Con, and I think we had 20,000 people go through the game.
Wow.
Room. So there's just a ton of, it was just a constant stream of people. So it was really tiring. Mm-hmm. I felt like a nurse. My mom was a registered nurse, and she used to come home at the end of the day saying that her feet were killing her because she was standing all day.
Yeah.
So I felt like a nurse.
So were you just, you guys just rotating while you're standing there, just making sure the game was being played correctly?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole other thing. But we had two laptops set up, hooked up to monitors. So Steve was manning one and I was manning the other. That's how we split it up. And it was tough because you just don't really have a whole lot of opportunity to leave the booth and just get some fresh air and just get a sip of water or something like that because it was so busy. But it was packed, but the opportunity was good. Again, just going and getting hands-on with people is really, really valuable for them to just play the game, and they can just look at you and say, this feels really good. The controls feel good. That looks good. This you could probably use improvement. And I just, old school, I just had a spiral bound notebook and a pen, and I was just writing notes down. And then after the conference, or after the show, Steve and I went back, and the next day when we got home, we just had a Skype call, and we just went over all of the notes and split everything out into cards, Trello cards, to basically tackle for making improvements to the game.
Wow. So you gave fans direct access to the game design. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously we didn't take every single comment they gave us. We're like, oh my God, we got to do that right now. But some of the feedback was really good. So it was a valuable trip.
So I'm sure you had some internal testing before the show, through friends, close friends and family. Were there any big surprises? What was the bigger surprises when just interfacing with actual people that you've never met playing your game? Were there any surprising comments that really like, oh, I didn't even think about this or heard about this about our game that helped you guys?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say sort of the types of comments that we got that we hadn't thought about were more related to controls. Very specific. I don't know how interesting it would be, but just specific things like, you know, when you press down on the controller, the player will squat down and you can sort of locks you into place and you can shoot.
Right.
I mean, pressing down an A makes the player slide along the ground. Those are just controls that we built ages ago. They've been there since the beginning of the project. And we're just used to them. We had a handful of people that were suggesting alternate controls and stuff like that we hadn't even thought of. So it was just good to have that look at the game from a perspective that we hadn't taken on it. And I think those kind of things are going to continue to grow as we push the game out in front of more and more people. Obviously, our sampling of people playing, we're going to get all sorts of stuff coming in feedback wise.
Right. How long was the conference? Did you guys have to stand there?
We just stood for like 72 hours.
Wow.
Same clothes. No, I'm just kidding.
It was about two days worth at least, right?
He chained us to our desk and we had to just wear the same clothes though.
Oh, sounds like work.
It was, I think it was three or four. It was 4 days.
4 days.
Yeah. Jeez. I think the first day was like It was like 6 hours. It was like 4 to 6 hours of straight demoing a day at least. Yeah. And that's pretty typical for these shows. It's really intense, like physically and mentally demanding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you're talking nonstop too. So your voice basically goes out by the end of the first day and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I have to.
Yeah.
I'm done, man. I am fried and we're only at the end of the first day and I got to keep going.
Well, if you were to do it again, would you have a better way of doing it? Any advice to people who are about to do this?
Yeah. Man, this is pretty common feedback that developers give that go to shows are just like, you're just going to lose your voice. You're going to be really tired. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot you can, I think that's actually a good thing. Cause that means you're interfacing with a lot of people and people like your game. And so, if you're not tired and you still have your voice at the end of the day, it's probably not a great sign, but, just bring hand sanitizer. We had a huge pump bottle of aloe hand sanitizer on our desk, and people actually were thanking us for that, which is nice.
That's pretty good.
I don't know. So, that's
Question for you. It sounds like you guys are pretty far along with the game. How much left do you have to build?
Yeah, we've been working hard on it. We're estimating probably realistically another year before we ship on PC. We haven't really made any formal announcements because we're just working as hard as we can. We know pretty much what the scope of the game is and how much we need to build, and we think realistically, yeah, probably a year. Yeah. Of course, anything can happen, right?
Yeah.
You know how that goes. You guys have been working in games for a long time.
I'm actually glad you said probably a year, because when you say probably, you're being, you know, more accurate than when you say a year. That's when you're wrong.
Yeah, you'll never hear me put an actual date on anything.
So has your schedule remained mostly the same? I know you're a family man, you teach, and your partner's roughly the same as well. You guys aren't completely full time. Maybe your partner is.
He's the situation. Yeah.
So how many hours are you finding during the day to work on this?
Yeah.
And how consistent are you?
Yeah, we're still, schedule has remained the same the whole way through production. Steve is completely full time on the project. This is 100% what he's doing. Honestly, for me, I've got a family. I also teach. The game is still my full time job. Mm-hmm. So it's still managing my time as far as my supporting my students and my classes, being sharp for my lectures, being a good husband and father. So, it's pretty challenging. We're holding it together though.
Yeah. It looks great, man. You guys have been kicking ass. Yeah.
We're enjoying it. I mean, we're having fun, and you know, each show that you go to, each step along the way, you sort of have to step back and be like, you know what? It's just the two of us. Let's just try and be proud of what we're doing and like be happy that we've made it this far, you know, because it's just so hard and there's so many challenges along the way. Mm-hmm. That aren't even related to making the game. Like, making the game is 50% of it. The other 50% is just trying to balance out your life and all of the other stuff that goes with making a game, like PR and marketing and business development. And there's just so much. There's just so much that goes into it. So the fact that we are alive, we are on Kickstarter. Yeah. We're just trying to take a deep breath, you know?
Yeah, it's important every step of the way that you realize you're passing graveyards of developers that didn't make it past that point.
Yeah, it's like you're walking through the cemetery looking at the tombstones and you're like, that's not me. Yeah. And you pass another one. Mike, that's not me either.
So after the show, right, you stood there for 3 or 4 days, 46 hours of just talking to people, sanitizing their hands and yours. Was there a significant spike, you know, on your social networking, just people following, people interested that you saw immediately from a show like that?
Yeah, what we did, we actually forgot to do it the first day of the show and we sort of kicked ourselves. But again, just a really basic thing that we did that was very helpful is we just put out a sheet of paper that said join our mailing list. Right, we just put it out, we put a pen on it, and you just put your name and your email, and we built up our newsletter significantly doing that. And what we also did is we said, hey, at the end of the day or at the end of the show, we're going to randomly pick a few people off the newsletter to give away a free Steam code of the game to. And then once you start giving stuff away, people are like, yeah, man, I'll give you all my personal information.
Social security. Yeah, go for it.
We had to add a social security field to the card. It's a slip of paper. No, I'm just teasing. But yeah, the newsletter was great. We had like our social media handles on the demo table so people could just kind of come up and be like, yeah, I want to follow you on Facebook or Twitter.
Right. They just take
it. So we saw a pretty decent bump. You know, the funny thing was a lot of people would come up and just be like, this is really cool. I want to buy a copy of the game.
Oh, right. So
we had to keep telling people that it's not done. This is the first time we're showing it. Mm-hmm. So if you're at the point where you're showing your game and you can offer pre-orders, or if you can just bring little slips of paper with Steam codes on them to sell at the show, that's a really great way to just get some revenue and build up your audience and actually sell copies of your game right on the show floor. One day we will be able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, is it too crazy? That's a very good point. Like, especially at shows like that, it's so simple to add like a web page with a pre-order purchase and to tell them like, oh, you want to buy it? Well, it's not done until this time, but you can buy it right now. And
yeah,
have you in the,
and we just weren't ready. I mean, we're so early.
Yeah. It's a good
tip. But the other thing that's becoming more popular is you'll get a physical version, like a boxed edition of your game made. And they're not too expensive to make as an indie developer. And you can just get a run of those made, and then they're all shrink wrapped and they look really beautiful. And you can just bring them along to the show and put them out and just sell them for whatever, 30, 40 bucks a pop. You know, it comes with a soundtrack. It comes with stickers and a poster. And so that's becoming popular too.
What is that? Is there a specific company that does that?
Yeah, you know, there are a few. We had a really good call just a couple days ago before we launched our Kickstarter. Steve and I decided that we wanted to add a collector's edition of the game as a backing tier at a sort of mid-high level. And we wanted to do a physical boxed edition. So we had a good chat with IndieBox. They're very popular now. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of them. IndieBox.com.
I'll look them up now.
In no way am I affiliated. I'm not like like a marketing shill for them or anything. But their products looked really cool. They were very friendly, and that's one of the groups we talked with as far as people that will handle the entire process of manufacturing everything, boxing it up. And then they'll actually ship it out too, right? They'll do fulfillment. So once you send them the list of people that you want to mail the stuff to, and they'll charge you a little extra, right? They're one of the more popular companies that does that type of stuff for indie developers.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I keep hearing with independent developers is the interaction on their social networking. Like you said before, PR, biz dev stuff is a full-time job, but you got to do it half the time when it's just two people. So how did you maintain that spike of people that are coming into your website?
Yeah. For us, it's been more of a slow trickle, which I think is pretty common for people like smaller, quote unquote, unknown indie developers. And most, like 95% of us are just off the radar. Mm-hmm. We're not Jonathan Blow. We're not Play Dead. You know, we're working on our first game. Mm-hmm. Even if you have a really long background and working on really big projects in the industry, once you go off and do your own thing indie wise, nobody's going to know who you are. So you have to fight tooth and nail to get people's attention in this space. And it's pretty brutal. Mm-hmm. As far as managing time between developing and like dealing with all the outreach and PR stuff, it's, you know, we try to just focus on development, but realizing that the marketing is a necessary evil. I mean, if you don't market your game and if you don't try to build a following, your game will fail. It will fail because no one will know who you are. And you won't, especially if you're trying to do crowdfunding like Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. We delayed our Kickstarter several times in order to continue to try and build our following.
Yeah.
Cause if you pull the trigger on a Kickstarter and you have, you know, 73 people following you, it's going to tank.
Yeah.
And that's how most Kickstarter indie games fail. Is the game could actually be fantastic, but nobody in the press knows who you are. You don't have a following, and it just sort of sits there. Managing that, it's a huge challenge all the time. It's a huge distraction from development. But it's sort of like, I have sort of taken that on personally. Mm-hmm. I sort of lead that effort because I want Steve to be focused as much as possible on code, on systems, on features, and just so we can get to feature complete on the code side as quickly as possible, and then and start building out the world of the game. So I try to shield him as much as possible from that side of the game.
So you seem like a guy that does a lot of researching and statistics. Is there a number that you found that correlates to a successful Kickstarter campaign? It's like, all right, so we got to build up to at least this amount of people to get this amount funded. Like, is there statistically out there something like that?
Man, I wish there was. We spent so much time preparing for this thing and researching, really just an ungodly amount of time. For the amount of money we're trying to raise, it doesn't really equal out as far as input output. But
yeah,
you know, there's you're going to get tons of advice from. There's a lot of information out there from a variety of developers who have done Kickstarters, and they'll say, "We believe you should have a mailing list of 5,000 people if you want to do a Kickstarter," or "We believe it's essential that you have 2,000 people following you on Facebook." And you know, yeah, who wouldn't want that kind of, we want that, but you can't just magically get those numbers. I mean, it takes years and years and years of hard work to get those figures and to get that number of people following you and caring about your project, because no one's going to care about your project until you've been working on it for a couple of years. And it has to look amazing. Mm-hmm. So we didn't honestly have those kind of numbers going into our Kickstarter, but you just, at a certain point, you have to just do it. You can't prolong the thing forever trying to meet numbers that other people are telling you that you have to meet. So, you know, I wish I had some sort of magic advice. I think Steve and I got to the point where we just sort of looked at each other and we said, I think the time is right. I think it feels right. The game looks good enough where we think people are just going to buy into it organically just by finding it on Kickstarter and through our decent following that we have, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I browse on your Kickstarter, and the thing I realize about different campaigns when it comes to Kickstarter is that, you know, you get the ones that show the developers talking about the game versus the ones that just show the game. So you guys opted into like, hey, we actually made this. Check it out if you like it. And surprisingly, I didn't really see you in there talking about it. So was that a specific strategy that you guys went for? Okay.
That was very much a conscious decision that we argued over for a long time. I was early on telling Steve, we got to put our heads in there. And he was very adamant about, Steve was very adamant about not doing that. He just said, people really don't care anymore about the indie story. There's so many people making indie games that the fact that you guys are making an indie game and you have this experience in AAA, it doesn't really matter. They want to see something that's really polished, that's really impressive. So we went back and forth. I'm like, how about just for like 5 seconds? And he's like, dude, he's like, we don't need to do it. He said, let's just make the game look awesome and just let the game speak for itself 100%, and people will get it. And so that became our strategy. It's just said, just put as much gameplay in front of them as possible. And we think if we've done our jobs well, it'll shine and people will get the concept and hopefully believe in it. So,
yeah, it sounded like he was tired of seeing your face.
Or maybe he didn't want anybody to see his face. I don't know.
Yeah, probably both.
Maybe a little bit of both, probably.
Well, I mean, it looks great. I mean, I think there's some validity. Maybe later, when you get your backers and you have these tiers broken down, you can be like, hey, thanks, guys. I mean, those are like the one thing I do like is seeing who's you build sort of like an internet relationship sort of with your developers, seeing who's behind the game, and you kind of want to support that even more. Yeah. So I think there's some value just seeing a head pop in and like, thanks, guys, you know?
Yeah. We do towards the bottom of the page, there's a pretty detailed section on who we are with a nice big photo. Mm-hmm. And we're really active on the campaign page, answering questions and responding to comments. And we totally agree, you have to have a presence in some way on the page. We just wanted people's first impression of the game to be the game itself. And then if they want to know more, just scroll down and you can see who we are. And I don't think there's any right or wrong. Like, some people like to put themselves in the video, and I think it works sometimes, and that's fine.
Sometimes.
Be attractive. The attractive game developers, right?
The one that doesn't make the game, yeah.
Yeah, the marketing guy, the business guy.
Yeah. So my question after the show, right? So you guys went through a bizarre 3 to 4 days of hellish standing up PR stuff and got a significant spike from day 2 to day 4, right? Just having that sign up sheet and then going home and maintaining it. So eventually the Made with Unity guys saw a tweet, right, by chance. And was it literally just them emailing you like, hey, let's get talking. We want you to come to the show. And how was that show different from the first one?
Sure. This is a great example, I think, of why you have to market your game. I mean, if I hadn't just posted on Twitter and Facebook our trailer and just been like, you know what, I don't know if anybody who's going to see this, I don't know if anybody's going to care, but I'm just going to put it out there and just try and be fearless about it. This is a perfect example of that because, I just posted it on social media. 15 minutes. I actually tagged it with the Made with Unity tag. So hashtag Made with Unity, which I hadn't even heard of until like 10 minutes before when I saw someone else doing it, another Unity developer. So I'm like, okay, let's just see what that does. And then just 15 minutes later, I got a direct message on Twitter from a guy named Dan Adams. Dan Adams he's sort of like the head outreach guy at Made with Unity. And he's like, this looks really cool. You guys are making the game in Unity. We should get to know each other and chat. And a couple months later, he came back and said, we just started doing this Made with Unity traveling roadshow thing last year. And it was really popular. Why don't you guys submit your game? So it wasn't like we went in through the back door on that one. This was an actual adjudicated type thing. So you have to send them a build of the game. They played it, looked at it, and then they liked it and they invited us to the show. That's basically how it happened.
So, you know, now everybody in their little like indie game is going to be like Made with Unity.
Yeah. Regardless of what engine you're using. Yeah.
Made with Unity.
Yeah. At Dan. At Dan. Yeah.
Now, getting your game across the finish line, what's a major hurdle that you're actually excited about tackling?
That's a good question. Where I'm excited about just getting back to game development.
Oh, there you go.
I've been in marketing and Kickstarter prep mode for so long now. And we're super excited about the campaign itself and about interacting with people. But once the campaign's done, I'm just looking forward to getting back to creating the world and like making an awesome game that we can put in front of the world, you know? And then we sort of take it one step at a time. Let's build this level. Let's get these characters in. Let's tell this part of the story. We'll move on to the next one. And all of that stuff builds up. Try and do every little piece really well. Mm-hmm. And all of those little pieces will come together into hopefully something that's larger than the sum of the parts. I just want to make the game. I want to work on the game. Yeah. We don't have a marketing department. Just pretty typical for us indie folks.
Is that a problem you think that we need to solve better as indie developers?
I think you personally need to do a better job, Larry, of helping us all out. It's really complicated. I mean, I think what it comes down to is there's just a lot of people. There's so many people making indie games now that the market is saturated. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anybody's responsible for I don't think anybody owes anybody anything. I think you just have to make a game that's really amazing and that stands above the crowd. And then once you do that, hopefully good things will happen and people will take notice of you. We've learned that you can't force people to cover your game. You can't just be like, yo, IGN, no matter how many times you email IGN, trust me, because I've tried. No matter how many times you email Giant Bomb and IGN, they just, those guys just don't care about you until you got to scratch and claw your way to the top. And then once you get there, you earn that right. You know, you earn the privilege of being able to be covered by those outlets. So we're trying. We're trying to get there.
Yeah. So you were mentioning the conference. Was that, so is that a pretty big conference? Where was that exactly? The Made with Unity guys?
Yeah, the Made with Unity. So that is the Made with Unity Showcase is the name of the show. And that is sort of embedded within the conference, which is called Unite.
Right.
So Unite happens every year. That's Unity's big developer industry. It's sort of like a mini GDC for Unity people. Mm-hmm. It's in LA. And yeah, that was another 3-day show. And they had this really nice space set up. Each developer got their own little kiosk with like a 40-inch monitor, an individual work setup. They were all sort of uniform in their placement and everything. But yeah, we got to meet a lot of, it was a great opportunity to meet really talented developers because we're all sort of right there hanging out. Everybody's really cool, friendly. We got to exchange information and there's a lot of VR there. So I had never done VR. So I got to do some really cool VR games. There's this really sweet mech game where you put the helmet on and you're inside this giant mech and it was pretty fantastic. Yeah, so there were a lot of conference goers. It's not like a public thing. It was all people that were at the conference that came and played our game, but also tons of other industry people. Like we met all the heads of Facebook and Mozilla and Google, all these internal tech guys from Microsoft would come up and be like, oh, we really like the lighting in your game. Like if you guys go to Xbox One, we want to like maybe do some HDR stuff and like maybe highlight your game as an HDR capable game because the lighting, lots of really nice contrast and color and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of great conversations and connections made on that front. Internal Nintendo, like guys and girls that are engineers that work internally at Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo, that when you get on their platform for distribution, they work with you directly to help support your game as you're trying to get through certification. Mm-hmm. So now we have some direct connections to people like that, which is super valuable.
Yeah.
So do you feel like that's an effective strategy for marketing or replacing marketing where, you know, you did the Made with Unity and then Unity jumps on to help you out. And then now Sony is like, oh, we really like where this is going. Or Microsoft is like, hey, we like this. We're going to help promote. Is that a good way for indies to kind of focus on marketing their game?
Yeah. I mean, we consider that grassroots. It's basically grassroots marketing. Cause you're not paying a lot of money to advertise on websites and on podcasts and stuff like that. It's definitely one way to do it. That was our plan the whole time, is to just try it that way first and see how it goes.
Okay.
So we've been pretty fortunate on that front. As far, we've had a couple good opportunities. There are a lot more that we haven't been able to take advantage of yet, like larger shows that we're just not ready to submit to yet, probably next year, like the PAXs and all that stuff. I think you can only go so far doing that. And then at some point you're going to probably need to spend some money doing ads and getting your stuff out there in front of a larger audience. There's nothing wrong. If you can make it work, you know, more power, definitely more power to you, but we're sort of already thinking about siphoning off some money, production money for marketing a little bit later on.
All right. That makes sense. Finding partnerships like that early on is definitely cool, but I understand if you're saying we're just going to focus on making a great game and then things will come. Right. But is there, I guess, one piece of advice that you could give that you would say like, all right, if I were to spend time actually marketing the game or like advertising the game, has there been anything that's been effective for you guys besides the, we'll give away a prize if you put your social security on this email list.
And the social security numbers of all your family members.
Yes.
We'll throw in a free download of the soundtrack for the game if you do that. Yeah.
And I know I ask a lot of marketing questions, but a lot of our listeners are developers who just have no idea how to get the word out.
Yeah, marketing is a huge, it's one of the biggest challenges we face. And I think all your other devs that listen to the show are probably nodding their heads that are trying to make an indie game. You know, I would say that's really all we've been doing so far. We haven't paid to advertise yet. Okay. Really, probably the best thing that we've done so far that we've worked really hard on and spent so much time on is the Kickstarter.
Okay.
And the Kickstarter is such a great way to build an audience and to spread the word on your project. And again, Kickstarter takes a cut of what you raise, but other than that, you don't have to pay like $5,000 to start a campaign. Mm-hmm. But I really think you gotta just really focus as much of your time on making the game special in some way, because if the game itself isn't unique in some way or special or looks beautiful or is fun, all the marketing, all the money you spend marketing on the game isn't going to mean anything, because that core thing that you're trying to sell to people, if it's a stinker, you can't polish a turd, right?
Yeah, I've tried.
But if you're a good marketer, you can sell polished turds.
That's you've seen that.
I've seen that. So like this whole process of doing the Kickstarter campaign, which can be gruesome. Were there any tools that helped before and after to kind of drum up some attention before launching your campaign?
Yeah, let's see. I'm trying to remember back. We started press outreach a long, long time ago. And I think that's really important to do. As soon as you have something that looks decent and you can put your website for your game up and do some screenshots or a trailer, as soon as you get to that point, that's when you want to start reaching out to websites and individual press members. And I mean, I personally did a ton of work for about a year and a half now. I've been trying to build relationships, and it starts small. It starts with the smaller blogs, the smaller indie game websites, going to those sites, seeing who they cover, finding out the actual names of the editors who write the stories, getting connected with them on LinkedIn. And then that's a big tip, I think, is connect on LinkedIn, and then you get each other's personal email, and then you can start contacting these people as a real human being and not as spam. Mm-hmm. So building up a spreadsheet of press contacts, and then if they like you and they like what you're doing, you'll start getting some coverage and you'll start getting some stories written about your game. So for us, that's how we approached it. Again, like very grassroots, starting small to mid-size sites, and just trying to have them come to us and get the name about our game out there in front of people. And then it's just relationship building and with those people in games media. And they'll keep coming back if they like you. They'll keep coming back for more on your game. You got to have Facebook. You got to have Twitter. Those are required. Mm-hmm. People always tell you got to be posting, four times a week on Facebook and Twitter. I just think that's BS. There's just no time for it. Unless you have a social media person dedicated and you're really producing stuff regularly in development that just looks amazing, I just think it's a waste of time.
I don't have that much time to absorb that much content from one source anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, social media overall is just a wasteland anyway. So the chances of you getting your stuff in front of people, spending all that time on something that very few people are going to see anyway, we've decided that's not been worth our time. So anytime we do post to social media, we don't do it frequently, like maybe once a week, not even that. We'll put something out that's really cool and meaningful. And then we will sometimes pay on Facebook, like we'll boost our post. We'll pay 10 or 20 bucks to help push it out in front of more people. So to make sure that meaningful content actually is seen by people. And then just work on the game, just make the game awesome so you can get into shows.
Real quick, if it had to come down to one platform, Twitter to support your game or Facebook to support your game. The other one has to die. Which one are you keeping?
We have a significantly larger following on Facebook. So I would probably stab Twitter in the back. However, now that our Kickstarter campaign's gone live, the Twitter following has been increasing significantly. So I feel bad saying that. There seems to be more engagement on real engagement on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And you know how Twitter is just much more transient. You know, it's like people click the heart and then, but there's very little actual engagement on your content. So
I'm just letting you know, I've seen this click.
So how much more exposure outside of your core audience after day one on your Kickstarter? Like, have you seen like a lot of people sharing, a lot of people seeing it for the first time?
Yeah, it's been awesome. Like, we are so grateful to everybody that's showed up to the campaign so far. Mm-hmm. And again, that doesn't happen magically. I mean, Steve and I have probably sent out 1,500 emails over the last 2 days to friends, family, former colleagues, websites, past and present students at school, faculty, staff. And it's nice because you see, like, who cares about what you're doing? And more people than I thought would have shown up to the campaign have. So that's been encouraging. And, you know, we're not begging for money. We're just like, you know, go and check it out and see what we've been doing for the last couple of years. And if you like it, you know, feel free to pledge. But yeah, engagement is great. We've been getting Kickstarter did the little project we love. As soon as we launched, it was there. So nice. Which was exciting. Yeah, the games outreach person at Kickstarter emailed us before we even launched. And they said, we see your project in the queue and it looks really great. And we want to try and help you to get eyes on it. So that was also nice. Encouraging. So we're getting a lot of backers who are just seeing it on Kickstarter and they think it's cool. And we're going to need a lot of that to cross the finish line. Mm-hmm. You know, family, mom and dad and Uncle Joe and Aunt whoever are only going to take you so far.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned before the process of just maintaining the Kickstarter campaign has been gruesome, right? Like it's like a full-time thing. Like, has it been mostly just responding to supporters on commenting? Has it been mostly just updating them on what's going on?
Yeah,
keep them interested. What's the major part of just maintaining a 30-day? I'm assuming a 30-day Kickstarter, right?
Yeah, it'll be a little over 30 days. Yeah, right. Just for timing reasons with days of the week,
right?
95% of the work that we've done so far is just preparing for the Kickstarter. Mm. So when I say that, I mean the actual contents of the page, like making sure every asset is beautiful, all of the copy, all of the text is really well refined and honest. And then all of the outreach that goes into all of the emails you have to send to the press, right? So we send out a whole round of emails a month out, and then you have to follow up. You have to do social media posts. And then we followed up with everybody again a week out from the Kickstarter. So there's a lot of stuff going on. All of those emails are custom. I don't use mail merge. I don't spam. Mm-hmm. I don't have one email that I send to 1,000 people. So there's just a lot of fortitude as far as emailing people and getting the campaign ready and just doing what works and what does not work on Kickstarter. So you have to research 50 different campaigns. What tiers did they use? What rewards do they use? Are we going to be able to afford to ship t-shirts to Lithuania or whatever? So that's been most of the effort so far. And now that the campaign started, it's keeping an eye on comments, answering questions. We also have a Steam Greenlight page going. Mm. So we have two campaigns running concurrently. So we also have to be keeping an eye on comments on that page. Campaign updates, right? We had to plan out 4 weeks worth of new content that we're going to release to backers each week. So making of videos on art process, how the music is composed, interviews with the team members, you know, talking more in depth about the game design process. It's this huge thing that you have to build and support for a month. And if you want to do it well, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't put that effort in, it probably won't succeed. So that's why I'm so tired already.
Yeah, it's like six over there or something. Yeah. So, I mean, how has this students over there reacted to all this? It's like, to have a teacher that's actually doing stuff is a rare thing nowadays. Like, it must be pretty cool. Wow.
Yeah, they're excited. And I've had some students for a couple of years, so they've seen this thing grow from inception, you know, the idea coming all the way through. And I try and share stuff with them, like what I'm doing, and show them models and cinematics and stuff of what we're doing on the game. And yeah, I mean, I just welcome them to ask questions, because I know some of them want to do this. So I'm just sort of like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm pretty much an open book. So try and learn from the mistakes that we're making, so you don't do it yourself.
Yeah.
But they're good. I even had some students back us on the Kickstarter, which is really cool.
Nice. That's when they really need good grades.
They really want that A.
Yeah, I had to tell them that. You guys realize that I'm not bumping up your grade.
You're still failing.
Yeah, you're still failing.
Thanks, though.
Yeah, and then their pledge disappears the next day.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, you did get backed by Game Dev Unchained during this podcast. So there you go. Yeah.
I appreciate it, guys.
Of course.
Thank you so much.
It's the most we're willing to do. Wait, did that come? Well, I think it's the least you could do. Did I mess that up? That's
right. $7 each. $7 from Larry and $7 from Brandon.
There you go.
We'll take it, man. We'll take it. It all adds up.
Yeah. So this is one of the things that, you know, this is kind of talking to the students out there. It's a weird time. It's an exciting time. I mean, it's really doable now to be a student and jump into indie.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I always fight with, at least with my students, is that, you know, the exposure to AAA developers, the exposure of going through the industry, kind of learning everyone's role is so important. So, well, I mean, what is the balancing advice that you give to these guys?
Yeah. I just try to be as honest as I can and not pull any punches with my students. And I give them the same advice. If they come into my office to chat, I advise them to, and it's not like it's any easier to do this, but I say, I would try to get a job at a studio, and it doesn't have to be a big fancy AAA studio, but any professional experience you can get working on a team, communicating, understanding the value of like getting your work done on time and to high quality, doing game development professionally with a group of people, I would definitely hands down go in that direction. Because you're going to learn what it's really like to work on a project, and also build a network. You know, the networking and making friends within the industry is really important. So if you go from school directly into your parents' basement, you're losing out on a huge amount of value as far as all the other things that come from working with around other people. But I also say, look, I mean, if you're really passionate and you have the skills and you want to take a run at it, and you have someone else, one or two other people who want to help you out, I say go for it, because you never know when you're going to get lightning in a bottle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's very unlikely to happen, but the odds are always against you. No matter which way you go in games, it's a pretty tough nut, you know, to crack.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That getting that foot in the door is very tough. So,
yeah, it's definitely a thing I struggle with to tell them, because I do feel that when you graduate and you go in the industry, I feel like you are pretty much a candle. That's that's burning out.
Yeah.
And like the longer
you my God, it just blew out already. I just lit the candle.
Yeah.
How could it be extinguished?
It's a really real thing. The burnout rate is insane, right? Just
yeah.
So there's like a certain level of optimism that I love about students. It's like they're wide eyed. They're loving the industry. I was like, oh man, you know, I want you to keep that. And if you can jump into India, be successful and still have that fire, that's amazing. You know,
yeah.
At the same time, to be realistic, you're competing with AAA guys who've done this for a while. Yeah. And it's not to say that it's not an equal ground, right? AAA guys are still struggling with the idea of going indie. And even with all that reputation, even with all that networking, it's a tough road. So yeah. It's a weird type of situation to consider.
The really funny thing is no matter what side you're on, if you're doing studio work or if you're doing indie, no matter what you're doing, you're going to be looking to the other side and saying, dude, I just want that so bad.
Yeah.
Like I can tell you, working on this indie game, we've passed up freelance opportunities.
Yeah.
You pass up that stability of just going into work, working on your assets, going home. Mm-hmm. We have to live it. We're always thinking about it because we love it. But then I'll get emails from friends working on these really big projects at Activision or whatever. And they're like, man, this one friend called it the content mines. I'm working in the content mines and I just want to like work on an indie game. Mm-hmm. And I just have to say, it's not like a dream or anything.
The mind is kind of my safe zone. I kind of want to be in your mind right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like stability versus instability, freedom versus safety.
Risk and reward.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't know what the middle road is yet. I think we're getting close to figuring that out. I mean, things are opening up to make it easier for us, but at the same time, it's crazy, right? You know, no.
But then the competition is so stiff
because
more people are doing it. Yeah. Hey, we'll let you know soon how it goes, right? You're going to go back and retroactively delete all of the podcasts that I'm on.
Yeah, this is on standby, depending on the
case. There will be these gaps in the numbering on your on your iTunes page.
Well, I mean, we're really excited. I mean, we talked to you a year ago. It's awesome that you're sticking with it. Like, that's the big thing. Consistency, if anything, is the huge thing that an indie developer has to climb over. So
yeah, we're still here.
Yeah. So guys, I'm going to do this part for you. Like go over there on Kickstarter, go support them. Maybe we can work something out.
Yeah. A new, The Distant Light. ANEW.
Yes. Go ahead and see if you can outbid our donation.
It can only go up from what you pledged, right?
It was basically what we had in our pockets.
I wanted to only spend a little bit of money.
He's like, I live in San Francisco or I live in California, man. I can't give you more than $10.
No, we came in at the $14 level, so we wanted a copy of the game.
All right. Beautiful. Yeah.
But I hovered over that dollar for like a good 2 minutes.
We appreciate the 14 times increase in your support.
Well, you know what? I'm looking at my stopwatch and it is telling me that we've been podcasting for about an hour now, just a little over. And you are a veteran of the show, so you already know what I'm going to say next. Go ahead on and jump on the mic and tell everyone what you're excited about, what you want to promote.
Yeah, I mean, for us, obviously, right now, we've got our Kickstarter in full force. So if you're a fan of indie games, if you like a unique sort of visual experience, we're making a Metroidvania-style platformer sci-fi game. And really, just if you just take 5 minutes, go check out our page again. If you think it's cool and you want to pledge, we would really appreciate it. If not, just sort of take a look and share it with your friends who might be interested. And we're on Kickstarter. The name of the game is Anew, A-N-E-W, The Distant Light.
All right. Well, my name is Larry Charles. I got the mic. It's a very early morning, and I'm saying good night. That was dumb.
Thanks for the opportunity, guys.
Yeah, see you guys.
All right, see you, Brandon.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to stay in touch or continue to follow our developments, then you need to go to facebook.com/GameDevUnchained and drop a like and stay in touch. You can also get the direct feed for this podcast on soundcloud.com/GameDevUnchained.